Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we've got a combination of wonderful segments for you. We've got some young poets here live to read their writings. We have an interview with a recent PhD in math from ISU. And lastly, we have the Ames Chamber of Commerce telling us about a traveling exhibit that will be visiting Ames. After a brief spell of autumn-like weather, it's back to summer. It was hot and humid over the past few days, and there's more of that to come. Monday through Thursday, the highs will be in the 80s, and the heat indices will be near or over 100. Very strange for September. Today will be sunny and 88 degrees. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there will be a risk of thunderstorms. And then finally, by Friday, this hot weather will break. Starting on Friday and into the weekend, the highs will be only in the 60s and the 70s, feeling much more like we expect for mid-September. And I, for one, am ready for that. Now we turn from weather to news. Dennis Hart is here to give us an update on the important news from Iowa over the past week.
Gail, good to be with you one more time on this Monday. Hello, everyone. One of the big stories around the state last week took place just down the road in Ankeny, where a police officer shot and killed a man who authorities said had pointed a handgun at the officer after robbing a Hy-Vee gas station on Saturday afternoon. The suspect? Not identified. There was also news about the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts. 24-year-old Christian Rivera will be arraigned this Wednesday in Poweshiek County District Court on a charge of first-degree murder. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported that Rivera could have a path toward a defense based on his mental state. Rivera told police that he blocked his memory after confronting Tibbetts in a rural area. Legal experts told the Register that if there is evidence of what they call diminished responsibility on the part of Rivera, he could avoid a first-degree murder conviction, and that could spare him a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Also last week, video of a controversial police shooting in Burlington was released. It showed that Burlington police officer Jesse Hill told a fellow officer, "Oh no, I'm going to prison," after he accidentally killed a mother standing in her yard. The fatal shooting took place when Hill slipped on ice and shot Autumn Steele. Hill was never disciplined, partly because he reported he was being attacked by the family dog. Steele's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit, which they settled this year for $2 million. There was word that the Des Moines Police Department had become the first in Iowa to install an in-house system to analyze and match shell casings to firearms. Police officials said last week that a machine that accesses a federally run ballistic imaging network will let investigators solve crimes involving guns much sooner. That machine lets trained personnel take digital images of markings on cartridges that have been fired and compare them to evidence logged into a federal network. Before the Des Moines PD got the machine, the state crime lab in Ankeny handled gun tracing analysis for it, as well as for each law enforcement agency in the state. There was also word last week that a steam leak at a dining hall on the University of Northern Iowa's campus killed an employee. The Rialto dining facility had been closed September 4th because of a steam leak. Then last Monday, 61-year-old Kevin Blay was working inside the steam distribution system tunnel at Rialto when another leak took place. Also word last week that late summer mosquitoes are sparking Iowa's worst outbreak of West Nile virus in 15 years. That virus is thought to have sickened 73 Iowans this year, killing three of them. Last year, all of Iowa saw just 12 confirmed cases. Experts say the mosquito season is likely to last for at least a few more weeks. Also last week, word that landowners who opposed the contentious Dakota Access Pipeline got a chance to argue their case in front of the Iowa Supreme Court. The 1,100-mile pipeline transports 470,000 barrels of crude oil each day from North Dakota to Illinois, cutting through 18 Iowa counties along the way. After the Iowa Utilities Board approved the project and the use of eminent domain to gain easements on properties, several landowners contested the decision in court. A district court judge ruled that pipeline builders acted properly in seizing private land through Iowa's eminent domain laws, but the landowners appealed to the state's highest court, and the case now awaits that court's decision. Last week also brought word that an 11-year-old Oskaloosa boy with leukemia, who had loved auto racing so much that he said he wanted his casket covered with race car stickers, had died. Caleb Hammond and his fight against his disease had resonated with people around the state and around the world. They had sent him auto stickers and words of encouragement. At least a dozen NASCAR entries had hashtag Team Caleb stickers on their cars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and a moment of silence was held for him last Monday at the Speedway. Caleb's life was celebrated this past Saturday at his memorial service in Oskaloosa. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported last week that over the past 12 years, the city of Des Moines had helped at least three firefighters who faced termination for alcohol-related offenses to instead retire with disability benefits in spite of a state law prohibiting the practice. In addition, the Register reported that other fire department personnel have stayed on the job even after they were disciplined for drunk driving or for being under the influence of drugs or alcohol while they were working. Meanwhile, in Warren County, residents living near the site of Indianola's proposed new wastewater treatment plant asked the County Board of Adjustment to stop the project from moving forward. Indianola wants to build a nearly $35 million facility on 18 acres northwest of the city limits, but neighbors said the new treatment facility would harm nearby properties. There was word last week that both Iowa State University and the University of Iowa had dropped in U.S. News & World Report's latest rankings of public universities. Iowa State ranked 56th this year among public universities. Last year, it ranked 53rd. The University of Iowa ranked 38th this year. Last year, it was 31st. U.S. News ranked UCLA, the University of California at Los Angeles, tops among public universities, followed by the University of California at Berkeley, the University of Virginia, the University of Michigan, and the University of California at Santa Barbara. Also last week, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley held a town hall meeting in Clark County that drew a crowd of about 150 people, a meeting that also drew some protesters. One of the topics Grassley talked about, previous week's Senate hearings that he chaired involving the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Those hearings were highly contentious, with Democrats moving to adjourn the hearings because they said they had not been given a chance to review thousands of documents involving Kavanaugh. Grassley kept the hearings going, and he said his Senate Judiciary Committee likely will vote on Kavanaugh's nomination sometime next week. Meanwhile, last week, the Federal Emergency Management Agency denied Governor Kim Reynolds' request for disaster assistance to help individuals impacted by the July tornadoes in Marshall and Polk counties. That money would have provided help with housing and personal property replacement, along with medical and legal expenses. The governor has a month to file an appeal. Still on politics, Governor Reynolds and her Democratic opponent in the November election, Fred Hubble, have agreed to three upcoming debates. They will take place in Des Moines, Sioux City, and Davenport, starting in Des Moines on October 10th. Libertarian candidate Jake Porter said he was not included in the debates, but he's still negotiating to get in. There was also word last week that Iowa household incomes grew at a faster rate last year than the rest of the nation, but that Iowans still earn less than the U.S. median income. The state's median household income was $58,500 last year. U.S. household median income was $61,300. Median income means half of households earned more than that and half earned less. Also last week, word that voters in the Dallas Center Grimes School District overwhelmingly approved a $46 million bond referendum to build a new middle school and to renovate other buildings in the district. Nearly 85% of voters supported the measure. There was also word last week about KCCI TV Channel 8 in Des Moines. After 29 years as news director, Dave Busick announced he will retire at the end of the year. Busick is only the third news director the station has ever had, following Russ Van Dyke and Paul Rhodes. KCCI has had Central Iowa's top-rated TV newscast for almost all of its 63 years on the air. And what would the week be without an animal story? Yes, indeed. There was word last week that a fountain depicting a female rabbit from a series of picture books will be coming to Western Gateway Park in downtown Des Moines later this year. Miffy Fountain is the name. Miffy Fountain will be placed on the north side of Locust Street between 10th and 12th Street near the Des Moines Public Library. It's going to be installed late next month. Miffy is a small, positive, adventurous rabbit who first appeared in a picture book drawn by Dutch artist Dick Bruna back in 1955. Miffy has been featured in more than 30 books. And, of course, a lot of talk last week around the state of Iowa about college football. Iowa State University played Oklahoma at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday and lost 37-27. I was there. They played a good game. The University of Iowa, meanwhile, defeated Northern Iowa 38-14. Meanwhile, one more note, ISU announced it has found another football team to fill in for the South Dakota State cancellation here in Ames, that game that was canceled because of lightning. That opponent is Incarnate Word. Now, in case you've never heard of Incarnate Word, it's a university in San Antonio, Texas. The team is in the football championship subdivision and is in the Southland Conference. The university has had a football team only since 2009. Its record last year was 1 win and 10 losses. This year so far, the team has 1 win and 2 losses. The Incarnate Word team will come to Jack Trice Stadium on December 1st at 1 p.m. And, Gail, that is my final word, and that's your summary of news from around the state of Iowa last week. I'll be back here Wednesday with a look at stories from the pages of newspapers from around Story County.
Thanks very much, Dennis, for keeping us up to date.
You bet.
Pickle me too. Went for a ride in a flying shoe. Hooray! What fun!
It's time we flew.
Said pickle me too. Pickle was captain, and Pickle was crew, and Tickle served coffee and Mulligan stew, as higher and higher they flew. Pickle me, tickle me too. Pickle me, tickle me too. Over the sun and up into the blue. Hold on, stay in. I hope that we do. Cried Pickle me too. Pickle me, tickle me too. Never return to the world they know, and nobody knows just what's happened to dear Pickle me too.
That was Ickle Me, Pickle Me, Tickle Me Too, written by Shel Silverstein. And that poem was from his book, Where the Sidewalk Ends. And now we have several young poets here in the studio with us. Maggie Westfold has joined us, and she has with her some young people whose poems were recently published in the Iowa Poetry Association's annual anthology. Welcome, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gail. This is a joy for me. This is Maggie Westfold. I have with me this morning four young people, Ames Schools and Gilbert Schools. And these young ladies not only had their poetry published this year in Lyrical Iowa in the student competition, but each of them had their poem recognized with an honor of honorable mention or better. We're going to let each of them introduce themselves to you and read their poem. And we'll start with Chloe Burns. And Chloe, would you introduce yourself? And Chloe's poem, by the way, received first honorable mention. Go ahead, Chloe. Tell us your name and then read your poem for us, if you will.
Hi, I'm Chloe Burns. And my poem is In the Graveyard. As I walk through slabs of stone, I know I shouldn't be alone, risking trouble and lives unknown, shake and shiver to the bone, in the graveyard by night. Many lives are honored here, secrets buried under fear, seconds passing like a year, relations stretching far and near, in the graveyard by night. Everything done is a waste, everything said is quickly replaced. Anyone here could be disgraced. A moment of peace is strongly embraced in the graveyard by night. But now the shadows stretch and fall, breaking down the inner wall, reaching with the silent call to all who have felt lost or small in the graveyard by light.
Wonderful. Thank you. All right, now we will have Reese. If you introduce yourself, Reese, and read us your poem. And this received a third honorable mention.
Hi, my name is Reese Weiner, and my poem is called Black Hole. Floating through time and space is a creature without a face. With its mouth, it uses force to pull us in and off our course. Going in is a wild ride, but black is all there is inside. The darkness swallows all the light until the day becomes the night. We will float inside its mouth and never know if we're north or south. Stars will forever be gone because the darkness will rain on. Where are we that darkness does flow? Inside a black hole where the darkness will grow. So say goodbye to the life we've made, for soon the light in the sky will fade.
Thank you. I'm impressed with these thoughts at your age. I don't think I was even writing poetry at you young lady's age. Let's hear now Heidi, who received a second honorable mention.
When it starts night, purple skies darken, fireflies start starting, and people start sleeping when it starts nighting.
Thank you. And that was Heidi Neeson, right? Heidi Neeson. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Now we will have Sophia, who received a first place with her poem. Would you like to read yours, Sophia?
Mm-hmm.
And what is, say your name?
My name is Sophia Kivariga, and my poem is called Candle. Candle, your light is like the sun, so bright. Your warmth like fire, keeping me warm. Your smell is fresh and full of life. But when your flame dies, it is like the moon, dark and dreary. The melting wax stops dripping, and I can't smell your scent. You don't keep me warm anymore, and your light is not bright. So I light you again.
Beautiful. I'm really impressed with the poetry for all of you. I'm gonna just give each of you a little chance to talk about. I'll tell you how I first remember poetry, just briefly, and then you can talk about when did you figure out you like poetry and what kind of helped you. Just briefly, what helped you? I was a junior in high school, and it was a teacher reading a poem aloud that just mesmerized me, and after that, I've always loved poetry. So, Chloe, just talk briefly about that. When did you first figure out that you like poetry?
I read a lot of poems by Jack Prelutsky when I was little, and in the past year, I've grown more interested in poetry, and I've been writing more, and I've been trying to read more of the classic poems.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Reese, how about you?
I first started out writing stories, and then I got bored with all of the writing, so I switched to poetry and kept reading it, and I really found that I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Very interesting. Heidi, was it a teacher maybe in school that got you interested in poetry?
Well, my ELP teacher said to the UOP class, make some poems, and so we did.
All right. So was it hard? Was it hard or easy the first time, you think?
It was hard.
Yeah. Gets easier with writing more, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yeah. It's a wonderful outlet. Thank you. Sophia, how about you?
I was in third grade, and our teacher introduced us to the poetry contest, and so we all wrote poems and inserted them, and I really liked it, so I continued doing it.
Ah, so you started with competition. That's a strong start. Good teacher, wonderful teacher to give you that opportunity. How about now we go around and share? I think we have just a couple more minutes. Let's talk about, let's see. Chloe, I think you mentioned a favorite poet. What was his name again?
I read a lot of Jack Prelutsky as a kid.
And when you say as a kid, I'm quite a bit older than you, so I think you're a kid now. How young were you when you started reading poetry?
It was a few years ago.
Okay, so maybe when you were 7 or 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's wonderful. I wish someone had started me on poetry earlier in life. I come from a big family, and we had some books in our home, but I was kind of reading Nancy Drew mysteries. I don't know if any of you too young, you know those books? Yeah, I didn't get into poetry until later in high school. Reese, how about, do you have a poet that you enjoy or you like to read?
When I was younger, we always had a book that I would read, and it was, yes, Jack Prelutsky, like Chloe.
Okay. Must be. I'm going to have to look into that guy. I have to be real frank on the air. I don't know Jack Prelutsky. That's terrible. I love this, and you, I know who Heidi's going to talk about. Heidi, who's your favorite?
Shel Silverstein.
He was the one who wrote the little song you heard on the air earlier, Ickle Me, Pickle Me, and many other wonderful poems. So I'm familiar with him. How about you, Sophia?
I don't really have a favorite poet. I just like to get fun poem books from the library and just read anyone's.
Anyone. So maybe collections. That's a good way to familiarize yourself with lots of good poetry. And I've always been told, and it's true, I have learned, the more you read, the better you write. You read other people's poetry, you learn from it. Not only you're enjoying, but you're learning. And that's a wonderful way to get better. That writing and reading a lot of poetry. Is there anything any of you would like to... I do want to mention your teachers. I know that Mark Royer is the teacher who helps you stay involved, and that would be Sophia and Heidi? So Mark Royer is your teacher at... Sophia, you're at Edwards, and... Heidi, you are at Sawyer, correct?
No.
No? You moved on. What's your school now?
I was from Edwards.
Okay. You were from Edwards. Okay. Are you going to Edwards now? See, I'm a year beyond when you people submitted your competition poems.
I'm going into middle school.
Okay. That's what I thought. And Reese and Chloe are at Gilbert, and your teacher is Katie Charleston, right? No? Used to be.
Used to be.
I got to catch up with you. You've moved on. So Katie Charleston was the teacher who had you in competition and helped you submit your poems.
Yes.
Great. Right. That's wonderful that teachers encourage this. And the Iowa Poetry Association that I'm with, we encourage that, the schools all across Iowa, to encourage teachers to have their students compete. And I'm happy to hear that you folks had that opportunity, and I hope you keep that up, because we want wonderful. If you see the Lyrical Iowa publication, there's a lot of wonderful students' poetry in there, and we love that, being a part of it. Well, I want to thank you all for being with us today. Is there any of you have anything more you would like to say? Any thoughts on? Well, you did a wonderful job, each and every one of you. And I want to thank you for being with us today, and thank you to your teachers for encouraging you. And we hope to see you all four back here next year with winning poems again. Thank you very much.
Pickle me, pickle me,
pickle me
too. Went for a ride in a flying shoe. Hooray! What fun! It's time we flew. Said, pickle me, tickle me too. Pickle was captain, and Pickle was crew. And Tickle served coffee and mulligan stew. As higher and higher and higher they flew. Pickle me, tickle me too. Pickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Over the sun and up into the blue. Hold on, stay in. I hope that we do. Cried pickle me, tickle me too. Pickle me, tickle me too. Never returned to the world, they know. And nobody knows just what's happened to dear pickle me. Pickle me, tickle me too.
Again, that was a song by made from a poem written by Shel Silverstein. And thanks to our young poets for being here and to their parents for getting them here so early in the morning. Despite a great deal of attention in recent years to the underrepresentation of African Americans in math and science fields, these disparities persist. For example, in the past few years, African Americans earning doctorates in mathematics were less than 1% of all doctorates awarded in that field. However, the Department of Mathematics at ISU has been making efforts to buck this trend and to recruit African American grad students to their doctoral program, and they've been doing this with great success. I had the opportunity this past week to speak with Dr. Shanice Walker. Dr. Walker obtained her Ph.D. in mathematics from ISU this past spring. She is now an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. Dr. Walker is the first African-American student to obtain a Ph.D. in mathematics from ISU. How did you become interested in mathematics?
My first initial interest in mathematics happened somewhere along the eighth grade. I remember taking eighth grade, just regular math, and I only took it for a few weeks, and my teacher decided to put me in the advanced algebra class, which I didn't take the pre-algebra class, but I just jumped right into the advanced algebra class. And from there, throughout high school, we had to choose a focus, and I was in a part of the magnet program, and we had to choose a focus, and I studied mathematics for my focus, as well as I studied some architectural engineering things and stuff like that. And so those are some of the things that we did, and that sort of first became my interest for math, was just wanting to learn more things about that.
Are you more interested in theoretical aspects or applied aspects?
It's a little bit of both. Most of the work that I do is definitely in theoretical mathematics. It does have applications to applied mathematics, but I mostly study the theory side of things.
You graduated from the University of Georgia. Did you grow up in Georgia? Is that where you attended high school?
Yes. So I attended high school in Columbus, Georgia, and I graduated from there. Many years ago. But, yes, I attended high school in Columbus, Georgia, and then went on to the University of Georgia for undergraduate studies.
And what brought you to ISU?
Yes, so what brought me to ISU is that in the summer of 2011, I had an opportunity to do a summer research program at Iowa State. And actually, it was at that point when I decided that I wanted to get a Ph.D. in math. Within my first 2 weeks of being there, I remember telling my mentor slash advisor of the program, Dr. Leslie Hogman, I was like, I think I want to go to graduate school and get a Ph.D. And from there, she sort of fast-tracked, okay, well, you need to take the GRE, you need to do all these things. And I did it that summer. I took the GRE, I started to look at schools that I was potentially interested in going to. And ultimately, I came back to Iowa State to get my Ph.D. So that happened summer 2011, and I started graduate school at Iowa State in August 2012.
So that summer program at ISU inspired you to go on to do graduate work and also provided you with a mentor to help guide that.
Yes.
That's good to know that ISU was able to have that impact. And what was the transition like? Was it difficult to adapt to the cultural or other differences between Georgia and Iowa?
I think that there were definitely some cultural differences, especially being away from home. But in terms of, like, the mathematics, it was always there, right? The mathematics is difficult for many of the students going through the graduate program. For a lot of us, it's more fast-paced. But in terms of, one, I had to get used to the weather, right? That was something. My first year, I was happy, though. It was a mild winter, so that was okay. I did have to get used to just the people around and the things to do, because I think that there were not as many things of interest to me in Ames, Iowa, as there were if I went to Des Moines or something like that. So I had to get used to that because I was used to living in a city where I could find things to do pretty much at every turn.
So the size of Ames versus where you lived in Georgia?
The size, but mostly like the lack of like cultural mm-hmm. entertainment.
And you became involved in a group called MOCA, M-O-C-A, Mathematics of Color Alliance. Can you tell us about that
yes.
group?
Yes, so MOCA was actually started my first year of graduate school at Iowa State. And it's an organization that served as a support group for graduate students mostly, but as well as undergraduate students in math and stats. And it was a way for us to get together to talk about some of the issues we were facing, but also we had during my first 2 years there, we had study potlucks, so that was something that we did. But we also had, like, game nights and things like that. And it was really nice because I think sometimes when there's a lack of diversity in a place, you feel mm-hmm. like you don't belong. So having Mocha Def brought us together.
And was that student-run organization, and did students start it?
So students did not start it. Michael Young actually started.
And
Michael Young and Leslie Hogren actually were very integral in starting that. So Michael Young was served as the advisor for Mocha.
And those are two professors in the Department of Mathematics.
Yes.
My understanding is that the Department of Mathematics at ISU is quite successful in attracting and supporting students from underrepresented groups into their graduate program. What do they do that contributes to that?
I think one of the things that was helpful for me was Mocha, my first year, just having that and just being able to talk to someone. So I actually met Michael Young back in 2011 when we were doing research. He was a postdoc student of Leslie Hodgman. And so I met him then. But having the opportunity to be able to connect, and I think that that was something that was important. So the year that I enrolled as a graduate student at Iowa State, there were 4 African-American females at Iowa State in the math department. And that was a huge difference from the year before. And throughout my time there, there were other people of color and other students of color. And just getting together with those students, it was definitely helpful in helping us to stay. And that's one side of support, having the cultural support and someone who you feel like you can connect with culturally. But also, we should talk about just even the other graduate students. Our graduate program was very social there. There's always something to do. There's always graduate students inviting you to come and do things, as well as the faculty members. I feel like I had a really good connection with my faculty members, especially those who taught my courses, and my advisor, Dr. Martin, that we could talk about things, and we can actually talk about issues that I was facing as a mathematician, that I was facing as an underrepresented minority, or anything.
How important do you think it is for young people like yourself or others who are part of underrepresented groups, how important is it to have role models? Even thinking back to your younger years, did you have role models of people like you who could be successful in mathematics, and was that important?
Yeah, so thinking back to, like, even middle school and high school, a lot of my math teachers were women, and there were overwhelmingly a majority of those were African-American. And so that was very important to see that someone could do that and to also have someone do that. But then in undergraduate, the shift changed. That was the first time I really saw a shift. And so the shift changed. But I will say I did have a very supportive advisor, as well as my abstract algebra professor was very, very supportive of just what I wanted to do and helping to break down some of those barriers about, like, underrepresented minorities and the imposter syndrome that we sometimes face. It was sort of important to have faculty members to really push and to be confident in the work that you were doing, even when you weren't confident in it.
And the imposter syndrome, meaning having a feeling of that you're not really belong, you shouldn't really belong there?
Yes. I was going to say, I think that is very easy for underrepresented students to have the imposter syndrome when there are other students that look like them and they feel like they're not as outspoken or they can't be as outspoken.
And so it takes a real awareness by departments and programs to recognize that students are grappling with that.
Yes.
Earlier we mentioned, or I mentioned, that you were good at math. That's a common thing that people would say, oh, so-and-so is good at math, but other people may not be. Do you think that mathematics is an ability, or is that a misconception, that some people are just good at it and some people are not?
I say from my own personal experience, I think that there's no such thing as being good at it. I do believe that as long as you apply yourself, you can succeed at anything. And so I think initially when we look at as teachers, the teachers are looking at this and, oh, she's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that because I'm quick, I'm good at it. And I think that a lot of students, we fail to say, because I'm not quick, I'm not good at it. One of the things that this sort of reminds me of is that when I was in, I think, 11th grade, and I was taking pre-calculus. I remember turning in my exams last, and the students were like, she's always turning her exam last, but I consistently had the highest grade. And that was because I wasn't fast at it, but I knew what was happening.
You're right. We do equate that ability to do things fast with being good at something, but it may be a different kind of thoughtfulness that people who do things slowly bring to a subject like mathematics. What do you think schools should do, especially, say, K-12 schools should do to bring more African-American students into mathematics?
I think we, one, have to get rid of the idea that math is hard. I can tell you that in some of the math classes that I sat in, the teacher would say, this concept is a pretty hard, so therefore this. And I think if we remove the challenge of this concept is hard from the vocabulary, we can actually effectively teach the math. I think also having mathematics that's engaging. I hated worksheets growing up. I'd rather do something where I can use my hands and to really understand. And so having that, but also bringing in people that look like the students. And so overwhelmingly, if you go, so I was raised in predominantly minority or predominantly black elementary school, middle schools, and high schools. But I did have really good math teachers that were African American, but overwhelmingly in those schools, when you look at the math teachers, they were not of color. And so bringing in people who have careers and who've done things on the STEM level altogether that look like the students, I think will help push the students to do better. And then having that push, because I think that there's a difference here in what we teach our students. Some students are asked, what college are you going to? And some students are asked, what are you doing after high school? And I think that those set two different tones, and those sometimes set pathways for students.
Right, and all those subtle ways that that gets communicated to students, in particularly yes. in elementary and high school, and probably even through college. So now you're in a position of being a professor, and you're teaching some undergraduate courses now? Is that correct?
That is correct.
So what kinds of things did you take from your learning experiences around mathematics that you're trying to do in particular ways for your students that you have now?
Well, one of the things I took away from it is just the idea to be creative and to set up an environment where students can create what they want to talk about. So this semester, I am teaching a discrete math course, and we're learning about proofs. And so I'm creating opportunities for students to come up with their own examples. And then I am helping them to write sentences, like negations of sentences, in such a way that using their own examples. That, to me, as an assistant professor in my first semester, it requires me to be a little bit quick on my feet because I'm not sure what examples the students are going to throw out today, right? But I have to be prepared to be able to use their examples. Group projects, I'm creating group projects in the classroom. Even though it's one of the upper-level classrooms, I do believe that group projects will help. So we'll be talking about group projects, and I'm teaching them to learn to write proofs from a stance of being skeptic of whether or not the proof is correct.
Those sound like very different approaches than are commonly used in mathematics classrooms in universities. That sounds like it would actually be fun and interesting for students. What other goals do you have as a professor now, as you start your career? Are there particular goals that you have?
Yes, there are some particular goals. So one of the goals, and I don't know, I'm just moved to Eau Claire, so I'm not exactly sure about the community, but one of the goals is to have more students. We have a good number of female students, or students that identify as being females, in our program. But one was to identify students who identify from other minority groups to have them to join the math major. And so I think that starts even at the middle school, high school level. So I'm hoping not this year, maybe not this year, but in the next few years to reach out to more of the community to understand what's happening there and to bridge the gap, because I do know that there is a lack of students of color presence on campus.
Well, it sounds like you're going to really try to make a difference there, not just for the students you teach, but for the larger community. I think they're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me, Gail.
That was Dr. Shanice Walker, who recently obtained her PhD in mathematics from ISU and was the first African-American to do so. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. We've been joined in the studio now by Cindy Hicks from the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So the Chamber is involved in bringing to Ames a traveling exhibit called Smithsonian's Hometown Teams.
Yeah, and actually it's Ames Main Street. We're an affiliate of the Chamber.
Okay.
So we started working to bring this exhibit to Ames about 2 years ago. We brought together together a team of folks who might be interested in helping make this happen. We had someone from the Ames Public Library, someone from the Octagon Center for the Arts, from someone from the Historical Society. We had someone from Iowa Games. We had folks from the Iowa ISU School of Design. So a big group of people, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, our little committee had about 10 people on it. And in order to have the exhibit, we had to write a proposal to host the exhibit. And part of the proposal had to include complementing local exhibits. And, of course, when you look at the subject matter hometown teams from the Smithsonian Institute, there are a lot of things in Ames that are really complementary to that subject. Of course, we have the Cyclones, which are our quintessential hometown
team.
Yeah, and we have the Little Cyclones. When you look further out in the Story County, you know, you have the Nevada Cubs and the Huxley team, the Gilbert team. And so in this little area, there's so much to be proud of when it comes to hometown teams and sports. And so it was quite easy for us to put together a series of complementing local exhibits, actually.
So tell us when and where the main exhibit will be.
So the main exhibit that is coming from the Smithsonian Institute will be on the third floor of the Octagon Center, and it will be there from September 29th through November 11th.
So tell us then about the complementing exhibits.
So we have four locations for complementing local exhibits. At the Ames Public Library, there will be an exhibit from the Iowa Women's Archives on 6-on-6 basketball. We will actually have there a collection day for 6-on-6 basketball that will be on October the 6th. And so from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., local women are invited to come to the library, check out the display on 6-on-6 basketball. There will be a presentation from the Iowa Women's Archives from 10 to 10:30 on that day. And then from 10:30 to 2 p.m., we would like local women to come in and share their stories about 6-on-6 basketball, bring any photographs or memorabilia that they have. This year marks the 25th year of the end of 6-on-6 basketball, and the women's archives are working to preserve that history. You can't hardly talk to a woman of a certain age in Iowa without hearing some kind of story about how they played 6-on-6 basketball or how their mother played 6-on-6 basketball and how their team went to the championship. And it's really very cool, and it's something that the Iowa Women's Archives sees value in preserving. So that's one of our locations. At the Iowa State University School of Design on Main Street, we will have a display of Iowa State athletic memorabilia, and not just any memorabilia, but this is stuff that's been pulled out of storage that has rarely been seen. And so it'll be a really cool thing. You know, there is a lot of Iowa State memorabilia around, but this is stuff that you probably haven't seen before. And there will be a special speaker there as well. During the week of Iowa State Homecoming on October 25th, which is a Wednesday night, Tom Crochell will be at the ISU School of Design, and he'll talk about the first Iowa State Homecoming. It's quite historic, and it all came about because of the women on campus. And so his presentation is ISU Homecoming, a historic start to save the girls. And his presentation will be from 6 to 7 p.m. at the ISU Design on Main. Here at the right next door at the Historical Society, they will have a display on the history of sports in Ames. There's quite a bit of interesting memorabilia that has to do with sports in Ames that isn't Little Cyclones. It isn't the university. You know, for example, at one point there were two baseball teams in Ames. Baseball was really big in Iowa. On October 22nd, the Historical Society is hosting a speaker at the library, John Lipa, who is a baseball historian, and he will do a presentation on how Iowa met baseball. And he will also have a display of some really rare baseball cards and other memorabilia. On October the 9th, the Ames Historical Society will be hosting the African American Museum of Iowa. also at the library, and that presentation will be titled More Than Just a Game, Discrimination in Sports in Iowa. And so that will be an interesting thing for folks to hear about. You wouldn't think that that would be a big deal in Iowa. You know, we have the reputation of Iowa Nice. But at one point, African Americans had a hard time in Iowa playing sports and faced quite a bit of discrimination. And so they'll be here to talk about that. Our last location, of course, is Little Woods Herbs and Teas, which kind of seems a little strange for a place to host an exhibit. However, they are climate controlled in there for teas, and their owner used to be a curator for the Octagon, so it actually turns out pretty perfect. And so we will have a display there that is being loaned to us by the Dan Gable Wrestling Museum. So Dan Gable will actually be here on October the 17th. He will have a community reception at Little Woods where people can come and meet him, and that will be from 4 to 5. And then from 5:30 to 7:30, he will be at the library. He has a new book titled A Wrestling Life, and so he will give a presentation about his wrestling career, not only at Iowa State University, but also as a gold medal winning Olympian, and then as the winningest wrestling coach in history at the University of Iowa. So he's had quite a colorful career, and he's actually quite a colorful presenter as well. So those are our different locations. The Octagon Center for the Arts, the Ames Public Library, the Ames Historical Society, the ISU Design on Main, and then Little Woods Herbs and Teas. So along with that, you don't want to miss our opening night reception, which we've decided will be an opening night tailgate party instead.
Because it's related to sports.
So we're going to close down the street here in front of your studio, actually, mm-hmm. the 400 block of Douglas. And we're going to have the ISU pep band. We will have ISU cheerleaders and Psy. There are also other mascots that are coming to town to participate. So at some point, we're going to have a mascot dance-off. There will be some free food involved. Sigler Companies is going to hand out free hot dogs. Texas Roadhouse will be handing out free peanuts. The North Grand Cinema will hand out some free popcorn. We'll also have some actual food trucks. So if you wanted some cornbread barbecue or Indian Delights, there will be that. The juried photography show, which the subject was sports related this year for the Octagon, that will be the opening night for that as well. And so it'll just be a fun community event. We want everybody to come down, have some free food, check out all of the exhibits. We're very excited. One of the things that we really zeroed in on quickly when we decided that we wanted to host this exhibit was that we wanted it to be free to everybody. How often does a child in the middle of Iowa have the opportunity to see an exhibit from the Smithsonian Institute? And we wanted to make sure that families could come, that teachers could bring their classes on field trips, and that it could all be free. And so we have a bunch of partners in that, the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau Community Grant, the Ames Tribune, the City of Ames, Hunziker Realty, Hunziker Property Management, Iowa State Athletics, Mediacom, Wells Fargo Bank, the Ames Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, it was really easy to go to them and say, hey, can you help us do this for our community? And we want it to be free. And everybody was just so excited to be involved and bring this to our community.
And why did you think that, not you personally, but the Chamber and Ames Main Street, why did you think it was important to have this focus on sports in particular?
Well, it just happened to, there are several traveling exhibits with the Smithsonian. This one was available, and it's through a partnership with Main Street Iowa. And because you have to have a statewide sponsoring organization. And so our statewide sponsoring organization obviously is Main Street Iowa. And then it just fit. It fit our community.
Is there a website where people, because you told of many different events in conjunction
right.
with it, in addition to the ongoing exhibits, where can people look to get the schedule and all the information?
So it would be www.amessmithsonian.org. So that's amessmithsonian.org. Another interesting thing about our website, we originally set it up so that teachers could go to it. The Smithsonian Institute offers core curriculum lesson plans for just about every age and every subject. So there's math, there's reading, there's history, there's all different types of subjects. Teachers can go to our website and they can download the lesson plans for their grade, their subject for free. And they can teach about the exhibit. Then they can go to our website and they can sign up for a field trip. And we also have field trip grant money for the first 10 classes that sign up.
Mm-hmm.
We know that quite often one of the things that stops teachers from bringing kids on field trips is the cost of the bus. And so we can offer $150 towards that cost. And so we would like to see teachers sign up for that opportunity.
So you must have been planning this for a long time, to bring all these partners together and to have that kind of funding available. It's really been a work to coordinate all of this.
You know, it really has. You notice that I just spoke for like 5 minutes without taking a breath. I've been completely living this for 2 years along with my committee members. And, you know, we've worked out little details here and there and added things and taken things away. And it's just been a labor of love for every single person on the committee. We're just so excited to bring this to our community.
What else would you like people to know about it? What else can they expect when they go to some of these events and exhibits?
They can expect to reflect back on their own time, their own experience with sports. When you look at hometown teams, when you look at sports, quite often in small towns, sports have shaped the way the community social structure is. I mean, for example, on Friday night in Ames, where are people? Well, they're at the football game in the fall. You know, on Saturday afternoon, where are people? They're over around the stadium. When Iowa Games comes to town, people get their teams together and they do that. They sit on the sidelines and they cheer on their children, you know, every Saturday morning over at the Hunziker Fields. It's so ingrained in our society. And one of the things that this exhibit does is it makes you think about your own experience, and if you're with somebody else, then you start sharing those stories, and it's just really a fun thing.
So it sounds like it'll be quite participatory, where
yes.
people can contribute and share.
Well, and we will have a group of volunteers who will be trained as docents. The Smithsonian offers a docent training program. And so these people, and most of them are Iowa State students who are getting this experience as interns. And they will go through this docent training program. And when you come to see the exhibit, they can give you a guided tour through it. And they can ask you questions and inspire conversation. And so it's really an interactive experience.
Well, it sounds like something that people can definitely look forward to. And we'll put the link to the website on the KHOI website. So it will be there for people to get all the details and all the information. But thank you for telling us about it.
Well, and thank you for inviting me this morning.
I've been speaking with Cindy Hicks, and she's been telling us about a traveling exhibit that's coming to town, Smithsonian's Hometown Teams. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Ickle Me, Pickle Me, Tickle Me Too by Shel Silverstein. Thanks to our guests, Shanice Walker and Cindy Hicks, as well as Maggie Westfold and the young poets from Lyrical Iowa. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. Support for KHOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting Kenny G, November 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu. That's center.iastate.edu.